If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Hello and welcome into some extra special Chiefs coverage here on Sports Radio 810. My name is Josh Briscoe, and some things happened today, folks. We got some NFL news with a familiar face and a face that many Chiefs fans wanted to become familiar. We got out at Arrowhead, and I got to ask a handful of questions to a handful of people throughout the Chiefs locker room. Also, asked a few things of Broncos head coach Vic Fangio. We'll talk about that at some point coming up here in the show. Plus, it's Tuesday, so no matter what the time slot is or where I am, we talked to Seth Kizer of The Athletic. That's coming up here in 20 minutes or so. And then to wrap up our hour and change tonight on A10, Beards brings you the latest edition of Sad Fans on Reddit. It's very sad because it is, for the second consecutive week, sad Chiefs fans. And if you want to get way into the weeds on the Texans game and to try to grapple with what went wrong in that game, how I'm splitting hairs in terms of this was the thing that was a problem versus this thing, you can hear me discuss the run defense versus the pass defense and the defense altogether being atrocious, how much each of those things mattered, the problems with the offensive line, Mahomes' ankle, all of that. We did a special emergency podcast version of Almost Entirely Sports Monday afternoon following the game, plus, of course, the post-game show with me and Brad Porter. If you missed either of those things, you can check them out on your various podcatchers. You can go to the 810 mobile app or 810WHB.com for the post-game show, or just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts, including on the 810 mobile app and website, to get that Monday emergency pod where we really discussed the Texans game with a general amount of length there, and we talked about a bunch of stuff there. The problem now is that we could seriously talk about that Texans game for 2 weeks. If the Chiefs had a bye week coming up, we wouldn't run out of things to talk about, things that we saw pop up during that game. But that is the opposite of the case this week because it is Tuesday, no show for us tomorrow, and then on Thursday, I will be back on the air in the evening because we'll be following Chiefs versus Broncos. It is a quick week at a time that you could argue is good for the Chiefs to try to get a win after dropping two losses. Maybe that won't be quite so painful. Or you can argue that there is literal pain in the picture. Eric Fisher and Chris Jones seem extremely unlikely to play. I would say Sammy Watkins feels pretty unlikely to play. Patrick Mahomes is dealing with this ankle injury, and I mean, I've heard just about everybody, including Seth, we'll see if he still feels the same way about the Texans game, talk about Mahomes' ankle as one of the things that's limiting the Chiefs' offense. I certainly think it's playing a factor. I would argue that the Chiefs would have preferred a bye week than a short week here, regardless of the fact that they're coming off of two losses, and lots of players will say, oh, it's good to get an opportunity to try to win a game. But this Broncos game both feels a little more losable than it did 2 weeks ago, from what both of these teams have done in these last 3 weeks. This is a competent Broncos team with home field advantage, with the most dangerous home field advantage in the NFL, in my opinion, being a Thursday night football home field advantage. So I'll try to talk about that game a little bit here tonight. But the news of the day started with a precursor move of old friend Marcus Peters being traded from the Los Angeles Rams to the Baltimore Ravens for both a player and a draft pick. And I tweeted, maybe jokingly, that the Chiefs should have traded for Marcus Peters. I certainly wouldn't have been mad about it. I'll tell you that. He'd be the best corner on this team immediately. I don't really want to take tweets on that. I legitimately muted the thread after I tweeted it out. But, you know, I digress for the time being, at least. The Chiefs could definitely use him. But whatever. I'm not, like, mad about it. Just think it's kind of funny. And then shortly thereafter, the Rams sent a 2020 and a 2021 first-round pick and a 2021 fourth-round pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars for Jalen Ramsey. The flu and the paternity leave and the back injury, eventually Jalen Ramsey did get what he wanted. He gets out of Jacksonville, goes to L.A., to a Rams team that has a handful of problems right now. They've really been sputtering these last few weeks. And so we can talk about that trade from the Rams' perspective if you want. I am sort of hesitant to spend any of our limited time tonight on that aspect of it because I think that we can discuss it similarly, at least by looking at it from the Chiefs' perspective with those terms. The Chiefs, I think the Jags would assume, will have a better pick than the Rams this year. Last year, the Rams were in the Super Bowl, obviously, but these last few weeks, they've looked a little bit shaky, and Jared Goff has looked extremely shaky. Who could have seen that coming? I saw that coming. But if the Chiefs would have offered that exact same package to Jacksonville, and I'm guessing what it would have had to have been would be a 2024th or a 2021 third, you know, to make that make up that value a little bit. If you would say two firsts and a fourth, but the Chiefs are giving up the one in this upcoming draft, I would understand both arguments that would happen immediately following those trade terms. The Chiefs should win a Super Bowl in these next few years. This year and next year are going to be the biggest windows because Patrick Mahomes this year is on full-on rookie contract mode. And then even next year, I think we'll see him held at a relatively low number as they try to kick a lot of that down the road. And then you just hope that everyone else you're paying a lot of money comes through. It could have been Jalen Ramsey as a part of those long-term plans because he's going to get a massive, massive deal whenever all those details ultimately come out and everything there is put to paper. He's going to get paid a lot of money, and that's okay because of what he can do. And so, for me, I have a hard time discussing this out without bringing up Frank Clark, because you spend a significant amount of draft capital and long-term money on him. The Chiefs literally couldn't pull this move off really with the Rams ultimately offered to the Jags. I mean, literally and figuratively, literally they could have because they have the Niners' first round draft pick their second draft pick in this upcoming year because that's the lesser of the two picks they trade to Seattle for Frank Clark. The better of the two picks they trade for Frank Clark. And it is the lesser. I've gone back three times. It's the lesser because there was always the thought that maybe the Chiefs' first round pick this year and the Niners' second round pick this year could be very close. They won't be because the Niners have actually turned out to be a good football team. Anyway, I digress. This would have been very hard for the Chiefs to pull off on a literal level. But on a figurative level, even the draft capital there is significant. They could have moved those picks, but what we've always been talking about these picks is things that will be scooted around by Brett Veach because he doesn't sit still very often in draft time, and that's fine. One thing that we talked about a little bit on Monday on the podcast exclusive is that the idea that the Chiefs' defense wouldn't drastically improve with a drastic improvement at cornerback is one of the most loud wrong things that I have heard come from Chiefs Twitter this season. And I know that that includes a lot of craziness, and I know that that sounds pretty aggressive. But honestly, one of the most loud wrong things that I've seen on Twitter this season has been the idea that the Chiefs wouldn't have had a much better defense with Jalen Ramsey, with Patrick Peterson, right? put him back on the table. It would be drastically improved, assuming those guys perform at the level that they previously performed at. Like, Patrick Peterson's a little bit of an unknown commodity. We haven't seen him play football in a long time, and he's a little bit older. So you have to be aware of that. But if someone does come in and shut down their third of the field, like truly shuts it down, you're lining up one of these corners across from a receiver, and there is no even trying to convince the quarterback that anyone else is going to go over there and try to help, because you're putting, for a while, Darrell Revis, Nnadi Asamoah, some Patrick Peterson, Jalen Ramsey most recently. Like, because that guy can neutralize just about any receiver on an island, that makes the other side of the field so much more congested, which is what you want if you're a defense. Or let's say that you were planning on giving safety help to the team's number one receiver. Well, now that safety can be blitzing in a Steve Spagnuolo defense where there's a good amount of that. Or maybe that safety is completely taken off the field, especially if you're running out there with three safeties, right? I'm not saying you're going to probably take off Tyrann Mathieu and bring in Ben Neiman or Darren Lee, or, you know, assuming Anthony Hitchens is back this week, which seems like he will be. But instead of running out there with three safeties, go ahead and keep Neiman out there and allow another linebacker in the box to try to stuff up that run a little bit. Or you can allow that Tyrann Mathieu type, which in this case is literally Tyrann Mathieu, or if you are running three safeties, it can be Dan Sorensen. Let them come up in the box and try to wreck some stuff in the intermediate. The amount of things that you can do whenever you're basically scheming against 10 offensive players with 10 defenders versus 11 on 11 genuinely benefits you, because you're essentially just getting closer and closer to that, I've got this guy, he's got this guy, and eventually you win that numbers game because one of those that the offense has is obviously the quarterback. And so if you can shrink the field and shrink the number of people you have to account for, that's sort of just how defense works. And also, like, it's not truly 11 on 11, 10 on 10, whatever, because, again, not only is the quarterback not participating in the traditional sense, receivers and running backs have very different jobs than the offensive linemen do, so overwhelming five O-linemen is easier whenever you have an extra pass rusher and all that. I don't really need to explain that, sort of fundamental football, but I sort of feel like about halfway through I might have lost somebody. I don't know who it was, but I feel like someone out there about halfway through that diatribe went, hold on, what are you saying about 10-on-10 football? So there's that laid out there for you, that listener, who, you know, maybe zoned out a little bit. I don't blame you. I zoned out a little bit. The long and short of that is the Chiefs adding a true shutdown corner would still be tremendously beneficial to this defense. The problem is, there's one fewer of those guys on the market, and there's already been a tremendously low number of those guys on the market because it's a really valuable position. It's why I spent all last offseason talking about how I thought the Chiefs were going to be looking into this very 2019 analytical perspective of, we're going to fix the defense with defensive backs as opposed to pass rushers. And I don't want them to move on from Chris Jones necessarily, but like, pay Chris Jones and then make it work with whoever you've got on those edges. Maybe just keep Justin Houston. And, you know, moving D Ford was fine, because I don't think I would have wanted to have given him that enormous contract. Oh, he's been excellent this year. I thought they were going to explore that, and they didn't. They make the big move for Frank Clark, and then they sign Alex Okafor and all of that, right? It's a more Spagnuolo move, but it's, I don't know, it's not what I was rooting for this offseason, I guess. And then during the drafts, the whole draft cycle, some of it before the Frank Clark trade and then a lot of it afterwards, I was very hopeful that they would draft a corner highly, because, again, that's really hard to find, that lockdown corner where you don't have to worry about anything in his region. And so I don't know if that solution exists. I don't know if the Cardinals want to trade Patrick Peterson. I don't know what it would cost. At this point, it's been so long since we've seen Patrick Peterson play football. He's come back from a suspension this week. I don't even know if I have enough information to tell you what should be his value or what he could do whenever he came back. I tend to think that he'll come back and be pretty excellent, but stuff changes, especially at a position that can be as volatile as corner. So I'm certainly not expecting a giant move for an inside linebacker. They brought in Anthony Hitchens as a free agent and before last season, gave him a bunch of money and he's that dude. If he's not that dude, that's a problem, and so far he hasn't really been, but in the eyes of the front office, he needs to be. You know, if you can bring in a couple of complementary pieces or things that you think might be fitting specific places that you lack, I mean, I'm always open for that. Like, I didn't have a problem with the Reggie Ragland trade, even as now. Like, is Reggie Ragland going to be used more to try to stop the run? I don't know. But the Cam Irving trade and Reggie Ragland trade, those kind of things rarely bother me because, especially if it happens mid-season, you're trying to patch holes in a year that you feel like you should be in the Super Bowl. That would be fine by me, but at this point, I'd be kind of surprised if they really went out and tried to swing a big hammer at any of those front seven positions. Corner is the one that I'm a little hopeful for still, but not expectant of. That's what I would say. So it doesn't infuriate me that the Chiefs didn't go two firsts and a third for Jalen Ramsey. I think that in general, that's better than it's better than you're likely to get if you were to take a corner in the first round 2 years in a row, and then in the fourth or the third round one of those years also. None of those guys, statistically speaking, would be Jalen Ramsey, especially towards the end of the first round and towards the end of the third round, right? None of those guys would be as good as Jalen Ramsey. But because we are talking about a salary cap sport, the enormous contract coming for Ramsey versus the rookie contract that those three fictional guys would all have does matter. And listen, you could make a very sound argument that part of the reason it matters more than it should is because of the contracts of Sammy Watkins, Anthony Hitchens, maybe in the coming years, Frank Clark. His number this year is not that high, so it's kind of fine. But maybe it's way easier to eat that cap space for Jalen Ramsey if you feel better about some of the guys you've locked down. I would imagine it would be. They haven't even paid Chris Jones yet, and I feel like that's got to happen. I feel more strongly about that over the course of this season than I did this offseason, which I feel like pretty bullish on holding on to Chris Jones. So all of that all happening this week, but really all of that happening today is just another angle with which to look at the chaos that the Chiefs are going through in this little short turnaround here. It's two losses, and then it's going on the road in a divisional game on a short week, Thursday night football. We're not talking playing Monday night and then the next Sunday. Sunday to Thursday is a brutal turnaround. I mean, I'm saying this as someone who hasn't had enough time to talk about the last game. I can't imagine what it feels like to have played in one and then be doing it again. But that's simply where the Chiefs are at this point. And I do want to give you a little look ahead to what you can expect coming up in this game on Thursday night. Brad Porter and I will have the postgame show immediately following the game right here on Sports Radio 810. And Vic Fangio had his conference call with Chiefs media today, and I brought a few questions to the table, and one thing you'll hear from a couple of directions, but something that we did talk about on Monday is how obvious it was to see what Tyreek Hill opened up in this offense whenever he was in it. Mahomes talked about it after the game, or he talked about it on Monday, actually, saying that they were in press man at the beginning of the game, which is what they saw so much of against the Lions and then against the Colts, And then Houston got beat by Tyreek Hill a couple of times, started backing off of him. The safety started cheating over that direction to help with him. That was all in that Texans game. And so Vic Fangio, obviously a defensive guy, who was the coordinator in Chicago last year. He's been a defensive coach in the NFL for the last 97 years. But that's unfair. But he's been a coach in the league for a defensive coach in the league for a long time. And so I asked him how Tyreek Hill changes the game plan as a defense whenever he is out there on the field.
Well, when you put a playmaker like that on the field with his speed and his ability to for the big play, it obviously has to grab your attention, and you've got to be able to make an adjustment or two. But they've shown clearly they've got a lot of good receivers and a tight end and back that are awfully capable also. So you go too much one way, they've got plenty of others that can hurt you.
And the fact of the matter is Tyreek Hill changes game plans. And so having him out there for theoretically all of the snaps against Denver, as opposed to about the half dose he got against the Texans, will help the offense all around. I pretty fundamentally believe that. I also asked DeMarcus Robinson about how his job changes as a teammate whenever Hill's out there and affecting things.
Great aspect to the team. We love having him back. He take a lot of pressure off the other guys, and he put a lot of pressure on himself, and it gets a lot of guys open.
Same sentiment in a similar fashion, but in a different voice and from a more positive perspective, because he makes DeMarcus Robinson's job easier. The other thing, though, that, I mean, we've been talking about this whole week, limiting the offense, the last few weeks, is on the offensive line and then the guy behind it in the injury. And so Austin Ryder talked a little bit today, again, out in the locker room in Arrowhead. And so I asked him about how different it is from the center position, obviously, how different it can be to have a rotating cast of characters to his left. The right side has been consistent all year, but on the left, there's been the injuries that have knocked out Andrew Wiley, and then Martinez Rankin comes in, but the week before, Wiley goes out, and Ryan Hunter comes in, and then at left tackle, it's Cam Irvin coming in for an injured Eric Fisher. There's been a lot of turnover on the left side of the offensive line, and I asked Ryder how that affects him from that center position.
Just different player, different body type. So you kind of find out, like, especially inside, you know, you're working in tight space. You don't want to be getting in each other's feet. And, you know, just going from practice to walkthroughs and stuff, just making sure everybody's on the same page, like where you're going to be when we have this type of play or with this going on, and just kind of evolving that. But, you know, we're doing a great job with, like, when guys have to step in there, that we're all doing the same thing, and the coaching there is excellent.
Realistically, how long does it take to be, like, completely comfortable playing next to somebody?
It all depends on the guy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it varies definitely depending on the guy, depending on the system, depending on the play. It's a hard thing to describe.
Right.
And so obviously that left half of the offensive line has had its issues, and something that, I mean, I didn't ask for Austin Ryder to say this, and I wouldn't have, but, like, you also simply have the fact that the guys there aren't as good as the guys you were previously playing next to. I mean, the entire interior has struggled at points this year, which includes Wiley and Ryder and LDT. Like, Fisher and Schwartz have held their own at a level that I have no real complaints about. But whenever you see that kind of turnover and more of the line becoming vulnerable, it makes sense that the defensive front or that entire front seven, depending on how aggressive they want to be, will pick their spots to try to find the weakest link in that line that, again, really does, as you heard Ryder point out, like, really does take a second and really maybe take several seconds to get totally comfortable whenever you are trying to play as a unit that way. I had a couple other questions for Vic Fangio, and one was about Mahomes being behind that offensive line and with the ankle issue that he's been struggling with these last few weeks. And I actually thought this answer was really interesting. You've heard Mahomes talk about how, you know, his ankle's not perfect, but doesn't feel like it's been limiting him. Andy Reid has basically said the same thing. And, you know, you don't want to make excuses or, frankly, tell other teams if it really is a problem. But I asked Vic Fangio, head coach of the Broncos, rookie head coach of the Broncos, I asked him if he's seen Mahomes look in any way limited at all in these last few weeks by his ankle injury.
No, you know, I haven't seen his ankle really affect him that much during the play. You know, I've seen him where he's, you know, favored it in between plays a little bit, but when the ball snapped, it doesn't seem to be on his mind at all.
Isn't that at least a little interesting? And I don't think it's totally out of left field. Like, you do see him a lot in a play, or between plays, hobbling around. And then once the play goes, it seems like he is at least maybe blocking it out. I think it would be silly to say it's not affecting him at all, because you do see him hobbling on it between plays and stuff like that. But I thought that was kind of an interesting way of handling that from Fangio. The one other thing I asked, I want to say, like, on the front end, now Vic Fangio doesn't know who I am, so I'm not worried about him thinking I asked a dumb question. I would say on the front end of this, I don't think, personally, that this is a great question, but I swear to you, as I was formulating, on the spot, by the way, I forgot that Fangio was going to be having his conference call today. As I was formulating this question and then ultimately asking it and then hearing his answer, which starts with the very firm first word you will hear in perfect Vic Fangio delivery, I heard Twitter around me in my soul, in my earbud. I heard and felt Twitter descending upon me, because I wanted to know if I could get a genuine answer on this, because I feel like a lot of people on Twitter have been implying their own answer. So I asked Vic Fangio, at the risk of being yelled at, about the fact that the Chiefs haven't run the ball very much this season. And I asked if there's any advantage defensively to knowing that a team is bringing a really aggressive, pass-heavy offense to a game, and if you can do any amount of kind of discounting what they could do on the ground, because, again, you know how much they're going to throw it. I could stop this answer after literally his first word.
No. Because they're still running it, you know, effectively. You know, they're a balanced offense. You know, we talked about those three good backs they have and their different styles. And they got a good line, and because of their passing game, then, you know, the run game is always a problem there.
I think he's telling the truth. I really do, and especially with the RPO stuff that they were doing so much of last week, and, I mean, they do it all the time anyway, and he actually talked about that at a different point in his conference call. You always have the threat of that ball staying on the ground. I think that the Chiefs are actually at a really good place in the math with how the offense is orchestrated. It's just they've had a lot of extenuating circumstances that have obviously cost them a lot of efficiency in these past two and maybe arguably last three offensive showings. But I will probably just save Vic Fangio's no to play every time we get a text or a tweet or whatever saying, hey, but like, shouldn't the Chiefs be running the ball more to open everything else up? No. No. Because it's the NFL, man. And it's LeSean McCoy in the backfield. And sometimes it's Damian Williams, sometimes it's Darrell Williams, and all of that works. You've got a professional running back in the backfield. There's always a threat that they're going to run it. It's not a Mike Leach offense, although actually he probably runs the ball like some. I think this is sort of the MO for running the football in 2019, if you subscribe to kind of where most of analytics Twitter ends up. As soon as a defense says, all right, you're never going to run the ball, are you? Then you run the ball. You run it on their light packages. You run it when they're not expecting it, although please not on second and 14 or beyond. But in reasonable circumstances, either in like third and one maybe or on the goal line probably, or whenever, again, you have a matchup advantage to keeping the ball on the ground, then you punish the defense for thinking that you're not going to run it. For me, that's the counter to your big, and this is sort of a fundamental disagreement that I'm going to have with a lot of people, but it seems quite silly to me for your big right hook to be running the ball over and over again when that's way less effective than letting your big swing be your passing game, especially when you have Patrick Mahomes in this group of pass catchers. Just wail on other teams with your passing game, and then whenever you need to throw in a quick left-handed jab, run it for 7 yards. But that's my philosophy, and again, I would say that philosophy seems to be maybe predominantly shared by Andy Reid, shared in many circumstances, perhaps. And I don't think that any opposing team is legitimately thinking the Chiefs just don't know how to hand the ball off, which I felt like we could all use a little bit of a reminder of. That's a long first segment, and there's going to be a long second one coming because Seth Kizer of The Athletic joins us next here on Sports Radio 810.
The most powerful sports station in America has a home in Kansas City. This is Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's Tuesday and I'm talking into a microphone, so it means that on the other side of this phone is Seth Kizer of The Athletic with us here on Sports Radio 810. And Seth, you can read all Seth's work on The Athletic, film reviews. He's got a piece up today that's a little bit different, but I think is really, really interesting. Well, it's up now. I think it went up yesterday. It doesn't matter. It's available for your reading pleasure now. And you can also listen to me, Seth, and Nate Taylor on Times Ours, Mondays and Fridays on The Athletic. Seth, I think that what I realized as we were getting ready to make this radio magic today is we both sound tired.
Yeah.
You seem defeated, Seth. Are you okay?
You know what? It's been a long week for reasons that have nothing to do with football.
Okay.
So, but also, it is a little bit, I was surprised you didn't introduce me as, you know, Seth Kizer, enemy of the free world, and the reason the run game has sort of mattered the last 2 weeks, or like whatever, because like my Twitter mentions they're just a mess. I like pride myself, like I am going to be communicative with people, I'm going to respond, and this week I'm slowly starting to give up, because it's just like, you know, when I say the run defense doesn't matter, there's the obvious caveat that it matters. You know, it's not that you couldn't give up 14 yards per carry and have it not matter.
Right.
There's obvious some nuance to it, but people just want to beat me up over what Seren referred to as the straw man version of my actual point.
Yes.
And so now I'm just kind of leaning into it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what the sound you hear is someone who's leaning into getting Twitter punched in the throat constantly.
I think that that's fair, though. I do think that it's typically, and I've seen a lot of this, because this is your army. You are ironically enough running on the ground into the battle on this one. I feel like I was following in those ranks very early on, and so I've got a bayonet wound in my shoulder. There was a gunpowder explosion that sort of singed my apparently like Revolutionary War style uniform.
Sure.
We're fighting for the football revolution, Seth, and
yes,
people are angry about it on the internet, believe it or not.
We've somehow landed in the middle of this much bigger overall debate. And now, fortunately for me, I have not been the main bad guy. Because as I'm kind of like saying, okay, you know, guys, whatever, then I have like Steve and Sam and Josh and like some of the, if you don't know who I'm talking about, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be exclusivistic. These are like analytics Twitter guys, okay?
Yeah.
They're all like busting to my mentions. They're like, no, Seth, you're right on this.
Yes.
Don't give ground. Don't cave because of two games. And I'm just like, guys, I'm so tired. And so like, here's the thing, I suppose we just got to start off. Look, yes, the Chiefs not being able to stop the run definitely hurt them against Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It hurt them against Indianapolis, too. It just didn't hurt them as much as a bunch of other things,
yes.
And that's all my point has ever been. And so, yes, if your offense struggles with consistency, if you turn the ball over, if your quarterback's gimpy, if you can't hold up on third downs in the pass defense, if all those things happen, then yes, the run defense being bad is going to be that's going to be another nail in your coffin. So if all those things go wrong too, yes, the run defense is going to matter. Because if all those other things went wrong, but you were awesome against the run, yes, you would have a slightly better chance at least making a game of it. Although you'd still lose. But
right.
That's neither here nor there. So please, what I'm asking, everyone, please yell at me for that opinion, not that the run defense doesn't matter.
I feel like maybe someone out there will be sympathetic to that plea, and many, many more people will not be. But that's, you know,
that's fine.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Yes, and it's Twitter, and that's going to happen. And eventually you're going to learn the beauty of the mute button.
I like being able to talk to people. And hey, the reality is I took a very strong, unpopular stance that run defense by and large doesn't matter. Here's what I stand by. Had the Chiefs played Tyreek Hill every snap, I don't think we're talking about the run defense today. Had the pass defense performed better, I don't think we're talking about the run defense today. Had the pass protection performed better, I don't think we're talking about run defense today. I mean, we probably still would because, you know, the process still matters. But it wouldn't be considered this like glaring weakness that's going to keep us from winning a Super Bowl. And so these things just are what they are. Time of possession, all that stuff. That stuff is heavily impacted by your own offense. If you want to like really actually divvy this up in terms of time of possession, you've got defense, which consists of pass defense and run defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got offense, which consists of running the ball and passing the ball, right? These are very basic things. Time of possession is affected by all four of those things.
Correct.
And I would put to you that run defense, a team's run defense, is the fourth place among those four things in terms of what swings time of possession the most. And so, you know, there's another one. There's a soundbite for people to yell at me for. Seth's doubling down on run defense.
I think that at this point you've now bolstered your defenses. So I do want to take a second to talk about your piece that's up on The Athletic right now and also get into what we just saw. And also, Seth, there's a game in 2 days. So there's a lot happening here. We're not going to be able to get all the way into the weeds on your piece, but I obviously people should go and read it. We discussed it a little bit on Times Ours on Monday also. Monday was yesterday. Oh, yeah, by the way, also you said earlier, like, oh, man, you know, it's been a long week. It is Tuesday, and I hate to remind you of that. But the piece on The Athletic right now is asking if it's time to question sort of the direction of the franchise, not in the Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes level, but the personnel type of things that are Brett Veach and certainly also include Andy Reid. For as much as he deflects, he's the dude in charge there. And whenever you took a look at kind of Brett Veach's track record as the dude in Kansas City, how would you answer your own question of is it time to question Veach and the personnel decisions that this team has made the last year or so?
I think it's time to write out a little note, keep an eye on this, and then put a pin in it and put it on the board somewhere where you don't look that much.
Yeah.
But to where it's up there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when you really look at it in terms of the big picture, and this is kind of how I broke it down, is, you know, what are the biggest moves Brett Veach has made since taking over and becoming the guy? Now, he always is going to get credit for pounding the table for Mahomes. Considering I was pounding the table for Mahomes, I guess I don't give anyone that much credit for that.
Right.
I can't place blame on the rest of the NFL for getting it so obviously wrong on Mahomes and Watson. Like, that's honestly where I come from, is like Mahomes was pretty obvious, in my opinion. If you watch his tape, it was like, dude, this guy's going to be good. Same with Watson. People oversaw it, and so they take Trubisky and trade up for Trubisky. That, to me, is more denigration on the rest of the league than a real huge credit to Veach, but it does count, for sure.
Yeah.
But you look at everything else, and my biggest thing is the once Mahomes has his mega contract, the salary cap's going to matter a little more. But it's going to be kind of a situation where you've got to just hit on your big contracts, right? Like, not have to. It's okay to miss on a few. Everyone misses on a few.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone misses on a few mid-level starters, all that stuff. Football is hard to project. But for me, when I look at it appears to me that when you look at the biggest, like, five or six moves Brett Veach has made, he had a plan in mind for what the core of the roster was going to be during their Super Bowl run this year and next year, maybe not even as much next year. And that core of the roster, honestly, you're talking, you know, huge deals to Sammy Watkins, a really big deal to Anthony Hitchens, you know, using Alex Smith, easily the most valuable trade asset they've had since they've gotten here, using that to acquire Kendall Fuller, right? And then you Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark. Now, Clark's been okay, but not worth a first and a second and a $100 million contract. Mm-hmm. Sammy Watkins is hurt again. Now, hopefully he'll be back, and I'll feel like an idiot, and he'll pick right up where he left off. But that's 2 years in a row where he's played hurt, where he's been hurt for a while. Anthony Hitchens has struggled. Kendall Fuller hasn't been the guy they kind of thought he would be. And so, really, you're talking, you know, Matthews worked out pretty well. But beyond that, those big swings, and those, you got to hit on some of those, right? Maybe yeah. most of them. Yes. And then there's room for error on the rest of the roster if your core is in place. And then in the meantime, they haven't extended Chris Jones, who's clearly the best defensive player on the team.
Yep.
So, again, it's early in the season. They were 4-0 2 weeks ago,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Like, it's early to panic. You know, this last draft, they got Thornhill, who looks like he's going to be a real good one. Hardman looks like there's a lot of promise there. They got a few other guys that I still kind of like that I think could develop, but the drafts haven't been like home runs or something that would bounce out missing on big moves. So it's early. We'll see. You know, there's definitely a lot of time for it to come together. But if we come to the end of the year and all these same issues are exactly as they are right now, I'd say 2 years is enough time to go, huh.
Yeah, because you can't miss on the core guys, like you were saying. Like, listen, man, Darren Lee had a really bad game, and if you miss on your Darren Lee offseason acquisition, okay. If you
yeah.
try Khalil McKenzie and it doesn't work out, all righty, fine. If
Absolutely.
You get, you know, minimal value out of Ben Neiman and he's not really ready to be a starting middle linebacker in the NFL, okay, that's fine. But those early round draft picks and those guys that you mentioned, basically everyone except for Tyrann Mathieu on that list, you've got significant questions about. And those are the ones that you just can't miss on those. And especially if that ends up costing you, you know, Chris Jones, or I would argue, what if Frank Clark cost you Chris Jones and Jalen Ramsey because of the draft picks you could have given up for him? Like, you see, obviously, I'm not really explaining this to you, but you can
right.
see where one or two missteps like that really change what you're able to do or not. And so I like very much the
right.
idea that you put it somewhere, you don't look at it very often, but do write it down and put it somewhere.
Right, and I think the end of the season will be a good place to gauge. And I'm not someone who says, oh, Super Bowl or bust. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
That's winning the Super Bowl is incredibly hard.
The
like,
Patriots
that,
went a decade without doing that.
Right.
Like, that's crazy. I was reminded of that during one of their primetime games a week or two ago. Like, they had their banners up. I was like, oh, 2004 and 2014 and nothing between the two? That genuinely surprises me. That doesn't seem right.
And that's it, yep, and that's the Patriots who, I mean, they're arguably the greatest dynasty in the history of football.
Yes.
They went, like you said, they went a full decade without winning at all. Now, they made a couple of appearances, I think, during that time,
yes.
maybe just one.
I think both
it's hard.
The Giants might have been in there. But
winning
yeah.
is hard.
Yeah.
So it's not about that. It's just more about what I don't want the Chiefs to turn into is if you took away their superstar quarterback, they would be trash.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying that's what my opinion is. I don't want them to turn into that. Like, I love the idea that you look at, like, what's happened with the Colts this year is obviously they're not nearly as good as they would be with Andrew Luck, but they're still pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, some of that was having a very good backup in place. That helps.
Mm-hmm.
But they could take a big hit at quarterback production and still be a good team. Whereas, you know, with the Chiefs right now, it feels as though if Mahomes doesn't play at a very high level throughout the course of the entire game, there's some problems. Now, the big caveat to all of this is Eric Fisher is one of the most important players on the team, and he never got his due because, oh, he was first overall. He should have been, you know, the second coming of Tyrann Smith. and that was never fair. But he's a good left tackle, and he's very important to the offense. And I think people are seeing that now,
Yes. How
important solid pass protection is, especially this year, because this year, more than the previous years, the Chiefs are a vertical offense. They want to throw the ball down the field. And I think what we saw, like the only healthy like half they've had this year, that first half against the Jags, I think that's what they want it to look like all the time. I think they want to just bombs over Baghdad, tons of vertical stuff. Then once teams cheat a little, you know, you do some screens and that kind of stuff. And it just doesn't work nearly as well when you've got Eric Fisher out. And so with him out, with Tyreek Hill finally making it back just now, you know, with only played half the snaps and was a clear difference maker when he's on the field, with Sammy Watkins hurt, with Chris Jones out, I mean, the most important player on the defensive side of the ball, I'm willing to say, yeah, injuries suck. Especially this combination of injuries, while the Chiefs have played a fairly tough schedule. So I'm not saying it's time to panic, but yeah, you put a pin in it, and just think about it, and we'll see how the year ends.
Because we do have so much in this, you know, stretch of just a few days, you don't need to, I don't think you need to restate, you know, the pass blocking issues and the fact that there were plenty of nails that ended up going into the Chiefs' coffin against the Texans. But among the things that we maybe haven't touched on, or you don't feel like maybe we've given enough time to, or maybe in general you don't think that people have given enough time to, if you're going to diagnose the biggest issues from that Texans game, where would you even begin?
Maybe pass protection.
Yeah.
It's just hard to say. There were a few snaps where, I mean, you know, Austin rated that fumble after the Thornhill interception was an absolute game changer.
Yeah.
And that was huge. I mean, that was huge. You're talking at least a 7-point swing, maybe more if the Chiefs drive the ball down the field. You know, that was a huge play. And there were other plays where once Mahomes was gimpy. And so, I'm going to have to go again. Mahomes' ankle, second week in a row. That is, he is not himself with a bad ankle. Doesn't mean he's bad, but that offense kind of depends on him being great.
Yeah.
Like, not in that. I think if Andy Reid had designed the offense a little differently, you wouldn't be so reliant on that. But the plays they're calling are expecting Mahomes to do the things he normally does. It's not just a matter of scrambling around, but it's also a matter of planting the foot and throwing the ball accurately and with velocity, which is a little more spotty now. And so when you combine that, the pass protection issue with the ankle issue, it's just exponentially worse. And so I want to separate the two, but you really can't.
Yeah.
His ankle when combined with the pass protection.
I think the very beginning of the game in those, you know, those scripted first 15, four of those, I believe it was four out of the five. It might have just been three. I'm pretty sure four out of the five of Mahomes' first passes, he like almost literally was sprinting to his right immediately. Like the design was, hey, take the snap, roll right, and then find somebody. Whenever you're using something like that to sort of offset big concerns about the left side of the offensive line, You can't let Mahomes do that or plan on Mahomes doing that later in the game if he is a little bit gimpy there. Like, that really does all play together, even in, like, the counter moves to one of the problems.
Right. It just takes away what your game plan is.
Yeah.
And that's been tough. And so, you know, there's just a whole lot going into it. And really, I mean, they still played well. And again, you know, the run defense, I scoff at that a lot. But, yeah, the run defense, and this was more, I remember we had talked about this. This is kind of what people thought the Colts game was.
Yes.
Where it was more of a total team effort here. Because the defense has got to be better than it was on Sunday. Yeah. Like, that defensive performance was more like what we saw last year.
Yep.
Where anything but a really good to great offensive performance, and you're not going to win.
Yeah.
And that is no way to go through a football season and expect success.
Did you have any qualms with anything offensively outside of, I'm not just trying to bait you into talking about running the ball on second and 14, because I don't feel like we actually have to have that discussion. I feel like that laugh was our discussion on that. And sometimes even good coaches make dumb choices, and that's happened 2 weeks in a row on long plays with Andy Reid. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over it.
It's fine. Yeah, this is fine.
It's all fine. But did you, like, with when you look at the way the Chiefs have, I mean, we've talked about the Air Reid offense thing. I feel like maybe they might be at a decent spot in terms of the pass-run balance, and they ran the ball decently whenever they were actually trying to run it. Were you looking at anything in terms of depth of target or choices made by Mahomes? Anything offensively that existed outside of the pass block slash ankle conundrum?
Sure. I'm only a little ways into it right now, but it is a little disappointing that, and this is going to sound weird, I felt like, you know, with some of the RPOs and that kind of stuff, they maybe could have run the ball a little more with success, which to me isn't running the ball just to run the ball.
Right.
It's running the ball in an advantageous situation.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, it was mostly execution stuff. Mm. It was, and you know, it's so easy. Andy Reid really does brilliantly design the offense, mm-hmm. so it's usually pretty tough to find stuff except for execution-based stuff.
Yeah.
When you're talking this offense. And that was the case when Alex Smith was in town, and still the case now. People always want, Andy Reid's too conservative a play caller. Andy Reid's too, you know, all this stuff. And then, you know, when Mahomes is clicking, people are like, holy crap, Andy Reid's the GOAT, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And the reality is most of it was execution-based stuff. They looked fine against man. I mean, there's no magic formula there.
Tyreek Hill came back. That was one of their three wishes from the genie in the lamp.
It just is a matter of, for me, bad pass protection can ruin plays.
Yep.
And they're just having too many plays where from center to the left on. And, you know, LDT hasn't been amazing, but I think he's done all right. I think Schwartz has done all right. Maybe not quite as much as he normally does. But from center to the, you know, to left guard to left tackle have just been problematic. And this wasn't, I actually think Rankins did all right. You know, he looked really mobile. He got out ahead on some screens and stuff. Mm-hmm. He didn't have too many plays where I was like, holy smokes, at least so far in terms of pass pro. I think Irving continues to struggle a little bit. And so it's just that, but when you've got three guys that are struggling a little bit or are average or subpar and they're all right in a row, the problem is even if every one of them only loses four or five times, now you're talking anywhere between 12 to 16 plays.
Yeah.
And that's problematic because enough stuff can go on. You know, let's say if LDT only loses, you know, three plays and Schwartz only loses two plays, now all of a sudden you're getting up to maybe 20.
Yeah.
To where there's just constant pressure. And this offense really is predicated on better offensive line play than what they've gotten.
This is not a normal place for us to be at this point in a season that has Super Bowl aspirations. But has any of this made you think about, like, draft strategy and reevaluation of offensive line play and stuff like that? Because I will say, it's a leading question. It has for me, where I don't like the idea of taking a lineman in the top 10, top 15, top 4, if you're the Colts, you know, maybe even in the first couple of rounds. Like, I would say I'm generally relatively opposed to that because you can find value later on. But I also don't know if that's the sort of mindset that gets you into trouble like this. Do you have anything on that?
Well, you know, really what they have right now is it's an injury situation.
Right.
I think if Fisher were in, and is Fisher an all pro? No, but he's a good tackle. Mm-hmm. I think that helps solve a lot of the issues that they have. Left tackles do remain very important. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of the issue is, you know, you lose your starting left tackle, you're in a system that's predicated on good protection, well, you're going to have some problems. And, you know, Wiley wasn't playing as well as was hoped prior to leaving due to injury, and so that's been a problem the last few weeks, is that Wiley hasn't been playing as well as was anticipated. And Austin Rader, he's done okay in spots, and he's really struggled in some spots. And the Chiefs have had very high level center play for a few years now, and so I don't know if I would say, oh, it's this emergency, because really Fisher's under contract next year, mm-hmm. LDT is, Schwartz is, Rader is. I assume they'll pull it together, but it's just for the last few games it's been problematic when combined with Mahomes' ankle.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, we just have a little bit left here. I'm going to do some, like, rapid fire. So you can give me some scale of 1 to 10, some yes or no's. I'll figure out how to phrase these. I'll see if I can get it all to 1 to 10. Scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you in this moment about Steve Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator?
5.
How much more optimistic are you now than maybe earlier in the season regarding the cornerback play? How do you feel about the cornerback play as of now on a scale of 1 to 10?
6.5. Feeling all right about them.
How do you feel on a scale of 1 to 10 about continually pestering the Cardinals about Patrick Peterson, et cetera?
I'd turn that up to 11. I understand the run defense has some serious issues, but if you can play lockdown pass defense, and they've already, Houston was tough, but they still did okay. They kind of gave as good as they got with some nice picks and that kind of thing. And I think if you, it's like, okay, our run defense is clearly going to be bad, but we can improve on that. With a move with a corner, I'd still be hassling teams about it because I think that they are. I think they're a Super Bowl contender, and I think you do everything you can. I also think it wouldn't hurt them to try to go out and find some kind of, run-stopping defensive tackles like Snacks Harrison or Jonathan Hankins. Mm-hmm. Those guys aren't as expensive as they used to be in terms of trading.
Yeah.
And there are a few teams that you could talk to that have some of those monsters. Like, seriously, if you go back and watch the Raiders game, the reason the Chiefs couldn't run the ball is because Hankins was ridiculous. And so, you got to maybe find a team with a guy like that and see if they're willing to give him up. Because you're not going to pay the same premium that you would have a few years ago. And is that maybe a waste of resources? Maybe. But when you're so bad against the run, it's kind of, it's one of those things where it's something that shouldn't matter, but it starts to matter more and more the worse you get at it.
1 to 10, how worried are you about the Chiefs going on the road to the Broncos in 2 days?
5, which is much more worried than I would have been a few weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And then last one here, 1 to 10. How much do you agree with this following sentence? The Chiefs should have traded for Marcus Peters today.
Five. I could, had they done it, it wouldn't have bothered me one bit.
Right.
I know it would have bothered some people.
Yes,
but
that's true.
For me, Peters, he hasn't been great since he left. He did all right with the Rams. Mm-hmm. He can play well in man coverage. He still has some tough lapses because, he bites on things. But he's still a good man corner, still a playmaker, doesn't tackle still,
which is
tough.
True.
Yeah. That'd be a rough thing to add to a defense.
So what you're saying is the Chiefs should have traded for Marcus Peters and then put him at linebacker.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, or put him in box safety or something. But, at the same time, it wouldn't have bothered me. His issue was primarily with Sutton's system.
That's what it
is. I think he likes Andy Reid. I think, by and large, the players in the locker room like him.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it would have been a huge locker room issue. So it wouldn't have bothered me really at all, but I also wouldn't have been like, yes, now we're here kind of moment.
I just wanted that to be in the universe so people can tweet us accordingly. Thank you, Seth, for your unending wisdom. You're charting all the offensive stuff, and that'll be up on The Athletic soon. And then we'll have a Friday episode of Time's Ours immediately following Chiefs Broncos. Are you still turning out like a Broncos pregame article this week, or is this short week?
I don't think I'm going to have time.
That's
I'm going to try to get the film review article up Wednesday like it normally is, and I'm going to try to be a little bit forward pointing with it. But, there's just not enough time in a week like this to really, put it all together.
So read the Brett Veach sort of based article up on The Athletic right now. Film review from the Texans game going up tomorrow. And then Time's Ours with Seth, Nate Taylor, and myself on Friday exclusively on The Athletic. I feel less tired than I did at the beginning of this conversation, Seth. Sorry your 2-day week has been so long.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, man. Thanks for having me.
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan.
Kansas City's hometown sports station, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's not technically almost entirely sports here on Sports Radio 810, but it's a Tuesday night. I'm talking into a microphone. Beards McFly is across the glass, and Seth Kaiser was just here with us. So, it's time. We saved it until the end of tonight's show because just a few segments with you here tonight on 810. But it's the first time that we have done an over-the-air broadcast talking into these microphones since the Chiefs lost to the Texans on Sunday.
Is that sadness I hear in your voice?
Well, it's the sadness of a kingdom. It is the deep, overwhelming despair of a team that is 4-2. But two losses in a row, two home losses in a row with some really ugly fashion. What Beards does for any Chiefs game is he goes into the depths of Reddit to the fan base of the losing team and compiles the saddest comments. It's a really funny bit whenever it's pain that the Chiefs put on others. But whenever the Chiefs...
Boy, it was looking that way.
And it sure was.
You're never going to hear the stuff that was from the first quarter of that game now.
Nope, it was great. I saw some of it that you tweeted out on Twitter.
Yeah, that wasn't even the best stuff.
Didn't make it to this.
Nope.
Didn't make it to sad fans because the Texans, breaking news, didn't lose that game. The Chiefs did. And so whenever the Chiefs lose, Beards goes into the depths of Chiefs Twitter. Last week, Chiefs fans were at least very funny. What'd I say?
You said Twitter.
Eh. Last week, Chiefs fans were very funny. I hope they're funny this week and that this together can be another example of how misery loves company and how
it'll be a case of that.
How being together through this hard time is the best thing for you. Beards, is this very, very sad?
Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah.
Let's hear what sad Chiefs fans had to say on Reddit this weekend.
And now, a list of things that Kansas City Chiefs fans said on Reddit.
God, Beard.
Defense sucks and we have no run game. So pretty sure they're just making it up now. We get f***ed over because they call pass interference instead of holding. Cool. Oh, that's f***ing horseshit. You can't f***ing announce the penalty then just say, oh, never mind. Upon further review, we have to keep this game close for the narrative. 15 yards. How is the defense worse than last year? This entire defense can leave. Shut the f*** up, Hyde. You suck. Just less than this run defense. 14-point swing, courtesy of the Zebras. And that 7 should have been ours, but proper officiating, right? Correction, sir. We can't f***ing stop anyone. Watch your f***ing mouth, Carlos. Oh, so tackling Kelsey's fine, but that's holding? File a f***ing grievance against these refs. God f***ing glue horses with painted stripes. Frank Clark is f***ing embarrassing. Brett Veach deserves to be stoned in the plaza.
Jesus.
Fire Spags. Fire Spags. Fire Spags. This half has been almost 2 hours. Ugh. Oh, there's Cam Irving on his ass again. They should have a tackling minicamp during halftime. Colts fan coming in peace. Breland was called for defensive holding 4 times last week. I count 3 so far this week. Ed Hockley needs to disown his son after this crew performance today. Absolutely embarrassing. Dan Faust needs to go f*** himself. I'm about to pull up the arrow and fight Hockley. We keep shooting ourselves in the foot. The refs are shooting us in the other foot, but still, a lot of this is our own doing. Comments. We have no chance against the Patriots in New England. Reply. We have no chance against Houston and Kansas City. Some of you never had to endure the Brody Croyle, Tyler Thigpen era.
And it shows. Yeah, that's true.
Pretty sure most offenses in the NFL could convert on a 3rd-and-40 against us at the moment. I keep asking myself why our defense holds so much, and then they say Ward or Breland's name, and it all makes sense. Time for a depression nap. It's a good thing we don't need to score again, given the way our D's playing. Frank Clark for the win! Oh, wait. So glad we have him. And that Cam Irving is out there. Making plays. For the other team. Sigh. I hate watching this team. Maybe the Chiefs don't run in practice, and that's why the defense can't play the run, and the offense can't run the ball? Maybe the defense is just trying to give Mahomes' ankle time to heal? Wow. We're getting worked by an AFC South team.
Again.
I'm not rage quitting like some do in Civ 6 when they're outmatched in 50-plus turns. I'm watching this until the last second. The Bob Sutton can escape you, but you can't escape the Bob Sutton. Andy Reid could f*** up a wet dream. Tank season? What? NFL gets what it wanted. Congratulations. Defense man, bad. End of me. Colts fan here. This game makes last week feel not as special. Oh my God. Someone tell the mixer room to throw a notch filter on whatever frequency that incessant hag is screaming at. Is it possible that the defense just wants to play football so much that they try to maximize the amount of field time they get each Sunday?
It's a great
comments. Apparently, Pat's left ankle was carrying this team the whole time. Reply. It's where the magic was kept. We should try replacing half our defense and firing our defensive coordinator. Oh, wait. We did that. Comments. We are not getting anywhere. Patriots are going to the Super Bowl again. This sucks. Reply. Which NFC team are you guys rooting for? I'm pulling for the 49ers. 105 million United States dollars. Comments. As a former Rams fan, I regret to inform you that this defense under Steve Spagnuolo feels incredibly familiar.
Oof.
Reply. What defense? Frank Clark is the biggest bust since Todd Blackledge.
That's...
Comments. So, how does a team acquire an entire offensive line and defense midseason? I'm asking for a friend. Reply. Brett, is that you? Gotta hand it to Brett Veach. It's not easy to poop away a contender from January's position of strength, but the mad lad did it. Ballard can only dream of such efficiency. I think next week I'll probably just slam my d*** in a car door. Probably more satisfying experience than watching this garbage team. I thought it was the Cowboys, but I think we might be the fake good team. I know what'll help. Bitching. Andy Reid's clock management, Steve Spagnuolo, a.k.a. Bob Sutton Jr., offensive line, and the secondary just gives me Ebola every week. What if Pat Mahomes never wins another NFL game? I don't know what's worse. The we're the worst pity party circle or the literally the best team of all time circle. That being said, Frank Clark's actually the worst. Y'all remember last year when we thought we were bad on defense? Those were the good times. And now, the runner-up for things the Chiefs fans said on Reddit. Comment, 3-5's not unrealistic. Reply, considering we've won 4, I think it is. And now, winner of things the Chiefs fans said on Reddit.
Pass interference rules important.
You can't just be out there and just doing pass interference like that.
1A.
Pass interference is when you...
1B.
Okay, well, listen. Pass interference is when you interfere the...
1C.
Oh, let me start over.
1CA.
The player is not allowed to do a contact to the other player that prohibits the other player from doing the... You know, just trying to get the ball. You can't do that.
1CB.
Once the player is off the line of scrimmage, he can't be over here and then say to the other player, like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to hit you. You better watch your butt and then just be like he didn't even do that.
1CB1.
Like if you're about to grab, hit, push, and then don't, you still can't. You cannot grab, hit, or push. Does that make any sense?
1CB2.
You gotta have the ball in the air and then until it just isn't anymore.
1CB2A.
Okay, when you have the ball up here like this, then there's the bulk you gotta think about.
1CB2B.
Pass interference hasn't been overturned in any reviews in forever. I hope that wasn't discrimination since the refs don't like having their judgment questioned.
1CB2B1.
Oh, wait, no, they just changed the call on the field. That was even worse.
1CB2B2.
Don't question my judgment, say the refs. I'm an egomaniac. Classic.
1CB3.
Okay, seriously, though. Pass interference is when the player makes a movement that, as determined by when you do a move involving the football and field of
2.
Do not pass interference, please.
Yeah. That's direct from the NFL rulebook.
Yeah, that was brilliantly written. Brilliantly written in the rulebook. Brilliantly translated by the Reddit commenter. I dare say, brilliantly voice acted. Beards, that felt like that one. It really came from your heart.
Actually, it was my mouth.
That's sad fans on Reddit, Chiefs edition.
It did not be a week three.
It didn't. Oh God, can you imagine if we have to come back and do this on, God forbid, Friday?
After a
loss to the Broncos.
And
a third consecutive loss.
Is that one at least in Denver?
Yeah.
Okay. So thankfully we won't have the, oh my God, they lost three in a row at home comments.
Yeah, just because the NFL got in the way from letting that happen.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. I feel like this conversation really undid any feel good that may have come to poor people who are listening to that sad fans and finding some meager joy in their life, in the misery, their shared misery. I think we pooped on it by saying that they could lose to the Broncos on Thursday.
Just replay it.
We don't have time. The good news is that I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to lose to the Broncos on Thursday. I think they're going to win. I don't think they will tie either.
Hopefully we read a bunch of John Elway horse comments next week.
Oh, God. The sad fans would be so good next week.
Complaining about quarterbacks.
Joe Flacco versus Pat Mahomes.
Yes, bring it. Give me all that love and sadness.
But if Joe Flacco beats Pat Mahomes, I think we legally have to retire the show. And maybe sad fans on Reddit. That can't happen. All right, Chiefs, don't let that happen. Because I want to come back in on Friday or Monday or Tuesday or whatever it is that we get to recap that game. I want to come back in with some really sad Broncos fans. Sad Chiefs fans really came through with good content these last 2 weeks, but I don't want to hear about it one more time after this. All right, that's the show. Talk to you Thursday night after the game. Bye, Mom.
The official broadcast partner of your AFC West champion, Kansas City Chiefs. Sports Radio 810 WHB.